This is the February 22nd edition of Commodity Week. USDA this week hosted its annual Ag Forum in Washington, D.C. The 96.5 million corn acre should have been positive to the corn market, and yet it finished lower on the week. We'll try to find out why today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Eric Rund, Champaign County farmer and Southern Hemisphere farm owner, about crop prospects from Brazil and Argentina and how he sees development of competition from those Southern Hemisphere nations. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find a way to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. Just hit subscribe. If you don't like it, don't worry. Come back and hit unsubscribe. It's that easy. The newsletter is a great one, written by our own Dave Dickey, Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. You can sign up today at willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's start our discussion this way. Mike Zuzolo, USDA, did release through its Ag Forum this week a 96.5 million acre corn production for the 2013 year in the United States. That was much lower than what many in the marketplace have perceived to be a 98, 99, sometimes 100 million acre production. Why is it the case that prices did not rally in Chicago on that news?
I think there's a couple of things probably within Glauber's testimony or his introductory speech that he gave, Todd, maybe that turned the attention away from that acreage number. I think first and foremost, he talked a lot, several paragraphs about exports and corn exports in 2013 fiscal year being down about 38% versus last year. He talked a lot about the corn exports being at their lowest level since the early 1970s in volume terms. He also talked about Brazil likely overtaking the United States as the world's largest corn exporter in the crop year 2013. You blend that together with his other part of his speech about how big or how little of a correlation between the weather and the yield is actually in place between drought years and non-drought years, and that the spring means very little. I think these things all added up along with this huge carryover number to tell the trade we're going to have an unbelievably big surplus of corn, and that's kind of how they took it.
Dale Durkles?
Well, I could make it quick and simple and go ditto. Everything that Mike addressed really is true. You know, the other overhanging thing that I think really is playing into the mix this last week and why it didn't have much response was, frankly, the weather. The system we had out in the Great Plains bringing in a really good amount of snow, rain into different areas out there and laying down a carpet of moisture for the wheat crop in particular really kind of dampened the enthusiasm in the wheat. And then you go out into the world and we got some wheat that's trading at a discount occasionally to the corn right now, which really has negative implications. As far as the export sector is concerned, India is the one that's really on the hot button right now. And there just was no reason for anybody to chase the corn market when the wheat market was acting so poorly. The other thing with the USDA numbers in particular, and Mike touched on it, you know, when the 96 million acre number was one thing, but they put out a plus 14 billion bushel corn production estimate. And everybody automatically looked at that. And even before they saw the numbers Friday morning for the actual S&Ds, went, you know, it's a 2 billion bushel carryout. Why do I want to get excited?
You talked just a bit about the wheat. Can you follow up with that? Do you think that the trade is missing anything in the wheat market from out west at this point? Are they counting too much, for instance, on the rainfall that has not yet developed out there?
I don't think they're really missing anything at this point. You know, the one thing I've pointed out to people is, as I've been on the circuit this winter and I've talked a little bit about it, even with mainstream corn people, because I've kind of pointed out the importance of the winter wheat crop as we go forward this spring. You know, when a crop's dormant, you really can't do much to negatively affect it unless we had had extremely cold temperatures and had some real winter kill issues, which we didn't have. We had a little bit of blowing wind in the far western areas, but we didn't have a lot of that. And so, you know, it really comes back in the wheat. It's, you know, what kind of weather we have when we get to break dormancy or when we break dormancy, because we are going to need moisture at that point in time. The thing with the system we had this week, and we're going to have another repeat here early next week, is that, you know, we at least are laying down a carpet of some moisture for the crop when it does break dormancy. And as we get into March, we really start that process. The other, you know, maybe people are sitting here thinking that, does the weather we had in the last week or so here represent we're finally seeing a shift in pattern too? So I think there's some doubt at this point in time about what's going to happen with the hard red winter crop. Then you step into the Farrago. You know, we can always counterbalance that with acreage of hard red spring up in the plains in Canada too. So there's just this uncertainty of whether really to chase the market. And you have wheat in the world that's still a drag on our export competition to a certain degree.
Mike, our Thursday afternoon agricultural meteorologist has been tromping through Kansas wheat fields for three or four, maybe as many as five decades at this point. He often tells us on that afternoon that this crop went in as poorly as any, and that in his estimation, maybe as much as half of it is not going to make a crop, although it's kind of early to do that. What are your feelings about the wheat?
Well, I think Dale hit a huge point there, and I think you're adding to it here, Todd. I got a really good email. I had sent a morning market brief out to my clients, and one of my colleagues in Kansas, who is represents a very large commercial feeder of livestock and poultry, sent me a reply back, and he said the winter storm this week definitely was a godsend, but we still have a long way to go. I think the thing the market is missing, and this is me talking as much as him, is that the hard red wheat crop is the lack of a stand. The dry fall did not allow much growth, let alone tillering. I think this is where Glauber, to his credit, talked about this in his opening comments when he talked about hard red drought conditions in Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma. They're running 50% very poor and poor combined. That compares with 10% in those states a year ago at this time. So I think if you ask me what is the trade maybe missing, I think it's that right there, that yes, there's no question the blizzard and the pattern, potential pattern shift Dale's talking about is going to hurt, help the crop that's viable. But this historical issue, I think, as far as the ability of the crop to survive going into dormancy, I think, quite frankly, the trade has kind of lost in the demand and the supply issues of the other complexes.
You know, to fill in with that a little bit, you know, you talked about, you know, they were talking about maybe having up to half abandoned. That may be a bit of a stretch, but all along here for the last month and a half, too, everybody's been saying, you know, 25% of the acreage out there could end up getting abandoned at some point in time. But wheat, you always have to be careful until you really get into spring and breaking dormancy, because it is like a cat that has nine lives, you know, and so it's so hard. And I think that's why people are being very cautious and careful about, you know, being real pessimistic about the crop. At the same time, you know, I don't think they want to be optimistic about the crop. But when you look around where we are here in the U.S. and the kind of crop we could have and where we potentially could be in the world, are we going to have the export demand to really pull it out, you know,
Yeah, that was
pull the market out of the hole.
That was my next question. When you look across the planet, is the wheat crop, Mike, in better shape than it is here in the United States?
I don't think so, based upon, other than India, I think that has been the biggest bearish surprise, in my opinion anyway, Todd. But I think when you look at the fact that we're hearing now that the European Union may be wanting to source U.S. or South American wheat, we now have China as our number two buyer on the weekly export sales. We don't know if Russia is going to import grain. We still have a terrific drought down in Australia heading into their planting season, and you still haven't gotten USDA to rectify either the Argentine numbers because of their crop partially failing this past winter, and also you have the Beijing office of the attaché saying to the Washington office of the World Agricultural Outlook Board, you're 12 million tons too high in production for China's production of wheat this past season. I see it almost the exact opposite. If you take India out and you take out the issue with Egypt and their currency going sharply lower and their buying power going down, I see wheat almost the exact opposite as maybe the market does right now.
Let me have both of you put this into context of corn, old crop and new crop, because, of course, the wheat crop in the United States will come in June and July, so it'll be dealing with both crops at that point.
But you got to remember, we'll have some insight into the wheat crop once we get into the month of March and certainly in April, because it'll be out of dormancy and we'll already have some idea about what that crop's going to look like. And so that's always important at that point. So that's why wheat's hugely important. It's the first crop we plant. It's the first crop that has a growing season. It's the first crop we harvest.
So you want to defer the question until later about the impact of old and new crop?
No, I don't think
I'm just kidding you, of course.
You know, in one sense, it's a lot like 1996, the whole environment we're dealing with here. If you remember 96, and I've taken a lot of people through this, we had a subpar crop in 95. We had China buy corn crop in 95. We had China buying corn from us winter of 95. We hadn't crossed through the $4 record high yet as we got into March. Everybody in the feed industry here in the U.S. knew we were going to be really tight of corn before we harvested the 96 corn crop. They were counting on a good wheat crop to extend what arguably was going to be a very tight corn situation. We got into March, and especially into April, the wheat was through dormancy, and all of a sudden the weather turned hot and dry. The wheat took off. We went to 7.5. The lid came off of corn. Corn went to 5.5. You know, that could replay. But if it rains, we could still have sort of an okay wheat crop, and it may not play out this year. But I think right now you can't be pessimistic. That's the one thing I think. Not at these prices yet.
Mike?
I think cyclically is what I went back and looked at, and it matches up a lot with Dale. The other year that seems a lot like this year, from a November-December price break all the way into the end of February, it looks like we're going to have this type of a wheat market. The last time I show that we did that was around 2002, 2003. We broke about 35% until March. We then rallied about 39% off of the lows that were set up from the earlier break. And then we took a pause, and then we rallied another 10%, and guess what? We were right back up to the levels that we had broken from the previous September, October of 2002. So by the time we got to the May-June time period, early July time period of 2003, we were trading back up towards the old highs from the previous fall high. And I think that works well from a standpoint of what Dale was talking about in the crop coming around as far as what we will know more about and what kind of situation we find. These next 2 weeks, with the 6 to 10 day forecast being dry and the 8 to 14 day forecast being dry, these next 2 weeks, if that plays out, I think the trade will look differently upon the wheat than they do maybe right now.
Here are some of the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for the week. The July contract for the wheat, by the way, at $7.23.5. We're down 27.5 cents on the week. The March corn at $6.90.25, down 8.5. December at $5.52.75, down 10.25. And the March soybeans were up 36.75 for the week. November beans at $12.66.75 were up a nickel. Why did the soybeans rally this week, Dale?
You know, the big story in soybeans this week really was China coming back off their week long holiday. Everybody had expectations that China was going to step in and buy. We had market talk all week long. that they were going to be in the mix, basically because of continued backlog of shiploadings coming out of Brazil in particular at this point in time, and that's really a function of the harvest getting off the mark slow this year. We were up, but I think by the time we got to the end of the week, on Friday in particular, there was some disappointment around. Number one, we'd only had a couple of cargoes that we had noticed they had bought, and we also had some cancellations. So there was some real questions about what's happening.
Mike, your quick assessment of the soybean market?
Well, you certainly need an Excel spreadsheet to keep track of China's bean purchases. We went from a marketing year low in export sales from this morning, so we saw a negative 521 on unknown cancellations, and then all of a sudden, like Dale was talking about, we had heard 500-plus in brand-new purchases. To me, it's about logistics in Brazil, some weather in Argentina, but I'd look for more cancellations in beans, Todd, if we don't have any more port disruptions. I think once they start that and go down that path, we have to put that into our marketing plan that they're going to continue to do that if they can.
This is the February 22 edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Back in just 2 minutes.